This is Friday, the 16th of September, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, Donald Trump changed one of his views of President Obama today.
Barack Obama was born in the United States, period.
VOA's Jim Malone is here to talk with us about that. Also ahead, humanitarian aid trucks are still awaiting the go-ahead to deliver their life-saving supplies in Syria. We'll talk with VOA State Department correspondent Steve Herman about that and the Syrian ceasefire. And International Edition's David Byrd will have a preview of a new movie about a big event in the Gulf of Mexico several years ago. All on today's International Edition. We do open today's chapter of International Edition with a familiar theme, U.S. politics. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, who has long questioned President Barack Obama's U.S. citizenship, has reversed that stance. At a campaign event here in Washington at Trump's newest hotel, an event that was painted as an announcement of the change in stance, Trump first introduced a slew of U.S. generals, military award winners, and veterans. And then he said this.
Hillary Clinton and her campaign of 2008 started the birther controversy. I finished it. You know what I mean. President Barack Obama was born in the United States, period. Now we all want to get back to making America strong and great again. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, even before Trump made that comment, President Obama was asked all about it.
I was pretty confident about where I was born. I think most people were as well. My hope would be that the presidential election reflects more serious issues than that.
Well, joining us in studio is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. The first question has to be asked of you, and what's your overall impression of all of this altogether that happened today?
I'm tempted to say I'm clueless here. The latest we in all a are, long chain of events that can only seem to happen in the 2016 election cycle. Okay, my overall impression is Trump has been trying to moderate his behavior for weeks. He's seeing his poll numbers go up. There's this grudging problem with the birther issue, which is a major issue for African Americans who think it was a kind of racist feeling anyway that someone would question the president's birth for so long, even in the face of evidence to the contrary. So to me, it seems like the latest example of Trump trying to dispense with controversies that have been dogging him. The question here is, by doing this so abruptly and kind of completely rewriting history about it and changing the narrative, is he creating more of a problem for himself, another controversy that will yet be debated? I don't think we know yet.
Well, also the question has to be, will it have any effect whatsoever on his supporters?
I doubt that, because nothing else has. The focus in recent weeks by Trump on reaching out to minority voters, African Americans, and so forth, it's not about getting black votes. It's about getting educated white voters to come out and turn out for Trump. He's been trailing Hillary Clinton in that category. I mean, whites who have a college degree generally vote for the Republicans by a slim margin. He's been losing that category to her, but in recent weeks, he's closing the margin, and that's why you're seeing his poll numbers close as well. It's a very competitive race right now, and I think he's looking at the polling numbers and listening to his advisors in realizing the more he tries to temper his behavior, the more acceptable he could become to that traditional base of Republican voters.
Now, what happens to that segment of Trump voters, those who say who will vote for Trump, who are motivated by the kind of behavior he had been shown up until the last couple of weeks?
Let me tell you, my friend, I just spent time in Northern Virginia and West Virginia. West Virginia is probably the state most likely to support Trump. Nothing Trump can say at this point is going to demotivate his strongest followers. If anything, the Clinton campaign has to be worried about, it's the fact his people are revved up. They're ready to go. I think they've long ago stopped listening to the specifics of what Donald Trump has to say. They've made up their minds. Clinton is not viable, and they're going with Trump no matter what.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's this small group in the middle that both candidates are now trying to get. If you look at the polls, they're both in the low 40s. You've still got 15% or so or more who might go for the third-party candidate or who are undecided. That's where the battleground will be over the next several weeks.
And conversely, when Hillary Clinton has something like either her email scandal, if that's what you call it, even has a bout with pneumonia, then all of a sudden her numbers go down. Where's that coming from?
Whichever candidate the race is about at the end, whichever candidate the race is a referendum on at the end, will probably lose.
Well,
so when the focus has been on Donald Trump and his controversies, what's been happening? She's pulled into a lead. When the focus is on her questions about trustworthiness, why didn't you tell us earlier you had been diagnosed with pneumonia? Why did you hold that back? That's bad for her. The polls close. This election is about two people and where do you stand? It's much less about issues than any race I can remember in recent time.
Are we going to see, even with the debates coming up in the next couple of weeks or so, any talk about real issues?
The debates are a key point in the race, especially that first debate on September 26th. It's kind of the Super Bowl, I think, for the rest of the way of what's going to happen. So many times in our history, that first debate has either validated one candidate or disqualified another. Obviously, there'll be great focus on Trump to see how he does, but there will be on Clinton as well because she has had her issues with veracity and with presentation. He is a master television showman. He will bring that to bear in the debates as he did in the primaries. The question is, will voters be looking for more for him? Specific policy ideas? How will they look at him as he reacts to various contradictions he'll be hit with?
Jim, stay there. Doug Bernard, VOA, has been following social media. And what's been the reaction to what's happened so far today on social media?
Well, the social media mirror is clearly reflecting this story. Clearly, the biggest trend right now, at least in the United States, is hashtag birther. Now, Jim Malone described Donald Trump's announcement as abrupt, maybe even unusually abrupt. It was just two sentences. He said, "I finished it." Social media has anything to say? This is far from finished. These are just a few of the tweets that I was picking
up. He also said that Hillary Clinton started it.
And we'll get to that in a quick moment. But here's, hashtag Trump holding photo op for his new hotel, masquerading as honor the vet thing, masquerading as a birther mea culpa, hashtag deplorable, keying off the Hillary Clinton deplorable basket of deplorables comments. Asa Julian on Twitter turning it right back, saying, this is pathetic. Democrats keep trying to distract from their sick, corrupt candidate. That's Hillary Clinton, who has no message. And here's a comment. John Cardillo saying, everybody conveniently forgets hashtag Hillary Clinton created the birther movement. Now, Hillary Clinton did not create the birther movement. There was some controversy. I know Jim remembers this well. In her 2008 campaign, the campaign released a photo. You may want to pick this up from here.
Well, I mean, there were insinuations back then that she didn't deny it strongly enough. But the idea that Trump has created this narrative, that she started it and he's finished it in, 2011, well, he's been harping on this for 5 years now. And then to come out at this news event today and simply say at the end, well, that's over, it won't be over. But here's the question. How will it impact the race? And so many things we've seen, it's not deterring his supporters. That's one thing. It's this smaller group in the middle. Will they find Trump acceptable as a change agent? That's a key question in this election because there's an appetite for change and they don't see Clinton being that agent.
Well, as you can tell, we could probably go on talking about this for the next 2.5 hours. Unfortunately, we don't have the time. But if you are overseas and you're wondering why we're giving so much time to this, it's because we're fascinated by it. It's as simple as that. It's the most interesting U.S. election I've ever covered. You too, Jim?
I'd say so.
And judging by social media, people are fired up. You use the comment, people are really hard into their camps. Generally speaking, on social media, you see that even more so. The undecideds are still keeping pretty quiet.
Doug Bernard and our national correspondent, Jim Malone. You can follow us. We'd like to hear what you have to say. Follow us on Facebook at the VOA Now and our website at voanews@voanews.com. My name is Ira Melman. We continue with International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, Donald Trump has said it, I think you've heard it already, that Barack Obama was born in the United States. 40 supply trucks wait at the Turkish-Syrian border for the okay to deliver help for people in Syria. The Obama administration is warning Russia that their military cooperation in Syria will not go forward unless humanitarian aid begins to reach Aleppo and other besieged areas. And a suicide blast Friday ripped through a crowded mosque in northwestern Pakistan, killing at least 23 and wounding at least 30 more. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A defibrillator is a device used to restore the normal operation of a heart after a life-threatening cardiac episode such as dysrhythmias and ventricular fibrillation. The machine delivers a powerful electric shock that stops the heart and allows it to reset itself to function normally again. While defibrillation has a long history of saving lives, it can be extremely painful, and it's possible the electric shock can damage heart tissue. After experimenting on mice, a joint team of researchers from Johns Hopkins University in the U.S. and Germany's University of Bonn have successfully demonstrated a system that uses gentle beams of light instead of electric shocks to revive patients with deadly heart rhythm disorders. To see if their system called optogenetic defibrillation can work on people, the researchers will continue their experimentation on a computer model of a human heart they created. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. We continue. United Nations aid trucks packed with supplies for civilians trapped in the besieged Syrian city of Aleppo are still stuck at the Syrian border as officials wait for confirmation that Syrian troops and rebels are committed to upholding the shaky ceasefire agreed to last week. A spokesman for the UN Humanitarian Affairs Office said 40 trucks are waiting at the border between Turkey and Syria until officials receive word that it's safe for the trucks to enter the country. Jens Learke says the United Nations does not need authorization from Syria to deliver the supplies across the border, but the trucks are sitting in what he calls a special custom zone until it's safe.
We know that there's at least 250,000 people in eastern Aleppo who are potentially all of them in need of some kind of aid. The first 40 trucks, as we heard yesterday, are loaded with food for some 80,000 people for a month. And we really, really want to get it to eastern Aleppo. So as I say, it's highly frustrating. We know the world is watching.
Well, the humanitarian aid story is only one facet of this very complicated story of what Syria has become and possible ways out of the situation. VOA State Department correspondent Steve Herman joins us now from the State Department. Steve, first of all, what's holding up the convoys, and is there anything that can be done about it?
Well, at this hour, really not. You heard the frustration in the words of that UN official you spoke with, and they are still waiting there with rival factions arguing over how these supplies will be delivered, and it's just not safe to go in. The Russians say the Syrian army had withdrawn from their positions in Aleppo, but then was fired upon by the rebels. Now, this is according to Moscow. We don't have this confirmed. And that the Russians say that prompted the government troops to return to their previous positions. And so we're not seeing any immediate indications that this desperately needed aid is going to get into Aleppo today.
What about the ceasefire itself? Is it working? Where does it go from here?
Well, I would say it's fragile, but neither Moscow or Washington is thrown in the towel yet, and both the Americans and the Russians are saying today that they want to extend it. There was a phone call today between Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, and John Kerry here at the State Department, and we're getting different views from Moscow and here at the State Department as to what exactly was said on that call, but the officials here are saying that John Kerry expressed concern about the what he called the repeated and unacceptable delays of humanitarian aid, sort of blaming it on the Russians who are allies with the Syrian government. And the Russians are saying that the only ones violating the ceasefire and causing trouble are the so-called moderate opposition backed by the U.S., and the Americans need to use their influence with the rebel groups to get them to abide by the ceasefire.
Well, I'll tell you, Steve, it's the kind of story that never seems to end, and everybody hopes it does sooner or later, at least positively in some way. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Sure.
Well, that is Steve Herman from the U.S. State Department. We'll keep you up to date and make sure you keep up to date at voanews.com. This is VOA.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
On International Edition, we check the business world with our business reporter, Jill Malandrino. She's in New York. Jill, it's been two straight months of things pretty flat through the summertime, but it appears some changes are on the way. Tell us about it.
There certainly are, and traders finally got their wish. We have volatility back in the market, which started on last Friday. The media was blaming the sell-off on interest rate potential hikes we might get next Wednesday. I don't think it was necessarily that. I think it's more of the bigger picture, traders worrying about the asset bubbles that have been created. So that's part of it. We're also in the season where the economic data calendar is slowing down. We really don't have much in terms of earnings until the season kicks off in the second week of October. So right now, traders are focused on the macro, which is the Fed. So all eyes on September 21st at 2 p.m. Eastern, when we get that decision, if they will hike or not.
Nobody can do it in 35 seconds like you. I appreciate it, Jill.
Thank you.
You too. This is VOA International Edition. Now, let's move on into the world of entertainment. A new movie is coming out at the end of the month. It takes a more personal look at the worst marine oil spill in history on board a drilling platform in the Gulf of Mexico. Here's International Edition's David Byrd telling us about Deepwater Horizon.
In April of 2010, an explosion and fire crippled the oil drilling platform, the Deepwater Horizon, in the Gulf of Mexico. Cement meant to contain the natural gas in the well failed, and the gas shot up the drilling tube and ignited. 11 workers were killed and 17 others injured in the explosion. The rig, which was leased by British Petroleum and operated by Transocean, sank. Then a device called a blowout preventer, which is intended to stop oil from leaking out of the well 1,500-plus meters below, failed. Millions of barrels of oil leaked into the Gulf over the next few weeks. In the film Deepwater Horizon, Mark Wahlberg plays oil rig worker Mike Williams. At the film's premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, Wahlberg said that rebuilding the disaster site in Louisiana during hurricane season was challenging, but worth the effort for the integrity of the film.
But, you know, it's the kind of movie like Lone Survivor where it's not about your own individual experience and you suck it up because, you know, we're paying tribute to the 11 people that lost their lives and all the men and women who were able to survive the Deepwater tragedy. So, you know, when you're aware of those things, it makes it a lot easier.
Actress Kate Hudson plays Mike Williams' wife, Felicia. She says there was added pressure knowing that the real families of the real victims would see the movie.
And so there's this little extra importance that's put on making sure that you get it right. And so I think that was one. And also, I just, it's nice to be a part of a film that kind of switches it. You know, you got this obviously enormous environmental disaster, but at the same time, you know, we kind of lost sight of the fact that 11 lives were lost, and and it's nice to sort of pay homage to them and their families.
Veteran actor Kurt Russell plays Deepwater manager Jimmy Harrell. Russell says he hadn't known about the number of people killed on the rig until he read the script.
But I had no idea. I had no idea 11 people had died. I didn't see anything on that. I didn't see anything on the oil rig burning, explosions that you could see from space. I didn't know that there were acts of miraculous heroism that occurred to help people stay alive. And I thought, yeah, where's that? That story is not as important as the ecological potential disaster.
Director Peter Berg credits his Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist uncle for his passion for depicting real stories. He also directed and produced Wahlberg's 2013 reality-based Lone Survivor.
I've always been a believer that if you can find a real great story and you can get access to those the people who are part of it and the culture that they represent, that to me is where the inspiration comes, and that's where the gold is for me.
Deepwater Horizon also stars Oscar nominee John Malkovich, Maze Runner star Dylan O'Brien, and Jane the Virgin star Gina Rodriguez. The film is rated PG-13 for language and intense disaster sequences. Deepwater Horizon opens in U.S. theaters September 30th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
That's going to wrap it up for us. This is International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Thanks to Patrice Martin, our director, Peter Hundley, our engineer. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The problems facing the world today are notoriously resistant to unilateral solutions, said U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a recent address in New York. Mr. Blinken spoke days before the opening of the 71st meeting of the U.N. General Assembly. He said the national interest of the United States demands the global engagement that has been the hallmark of President Barack Obama's administration, engagement built on the foundation of a system of rules, principles, and international institutions, which the United States, as the world's rising global power after the Second World War, helped establish. It is a system not without problems, but which got the big picture right, said Deputy Secretary Blinken, averting new global cataclysms, ending the Cold War peacefully, creating the space and stability for countries to prosper. Under President Obama's engagement policy, Mr. Blinken noted, the United States, among other instances, worked at the UN Security Council to advance nuclear negotiations with Iran and to destroy Syria's declared strategic chemical weapons capacity. Mr. Blinken offered examples of collaboration in human rights with our re-engagement on the Human Rights Council, where we have shed light on some of the world's worst human rights conditions and violators, and work the U.S. has done with new leadership at the Organization of American States to strengthen that institution's role in defending democracy and promoting human rights. Mr. Blinken stated we have reinvigorated our transatlantic partnerships and strengthened relationships with Asia's key institutions and collaborative efforts in establishing a coalition of more than 67 countries to confront Daesh and undermine its vicious, phony caliphate. Working with others, Deputy Secretary Blinken said, we build a foundation of trust, greater alignment of interest, habits of cooperation, and greater legitimacy that better enables us to mobilize others against common threats and seize common opportunities. The bulk of U.S. global engagement happens at the United Nations, which, despite its flaws and its need for reform, Mr. Blinken called the gold standard of global action when mobilized effectively. Now was the time to strengthen the U.N., to adapt it to new realities, he said. The U.N. is worth fighting for, said Deputy Secretary Blinken. It ensures that our collective action better upholds our own promises, and it will help us shape and adopt an international system that actually lives up to the vision of those who first built it, a global project that remains now, as it did then, indispensable to the health, the strength, the security, the prosperity of every nation, especially the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.